So thank you so much for the organizers for the opportunity to present this work, and thanks to all of you for being here. So I will talk today about realizing topological phases with dipolar spins. The talk will consist of two parts, one on symmetry-protected topological phases, and the second one on fractional churn insulators. And on the fractional churn insulator side, I would like to particularly mention Norman Yao, with whom I worked on this very, very closely. As you all know, the AMO community has recently achieved a tremendous degree of experimental control over interacting electric and magnetic dipoles. Of course, on the electric side, we have the polar molecules, but also Rydberg atoms, while on the magnetic side, we have magnetic atoms, which have a large electronic angular momentum, J, in the ground state, but also defects in solids, such as, for example, NV centers, which have a spin 1, in this case, electronic ground state. And in fact, the experimental results from many of these groups are featured in this conference. While the results I will present apply to all of these systems, because this conference is on polar molecules, I will discuss everything in terms of polar molecules. And it is particularly exciting that KRB has, in fact, already been loaded into 3D optical lattice at JILA, as we heard from June. And this is indeed the starting point for the proposals that I will be discussing, although quite a few experimental improvements still need to be made. The two properties of polar molecules that we'll be interested in will be the rotation of the two nuclei around each other and the permanent electric dipole moment attached to the internuclear axis. Now let's imagine putting these molecules in an optical lattice, one molecule per site. And for the rest of the talk, let's assume that the lattice is so deep that the molecules, in fact, don't hop, and they just sit fixed on their lattice site. Then you can imagine encoding an effective spin degree of freedom in the rotation of the molecule, and then using electric dipole-dipole interactions between the molecules to obtain effective interactions between the spins. And thanks to the DC and AC fields that we can apply, this results in a set of highly tunable exotic spin models. Now, of course, we're not the first ones to propose studying lattice models with rotational states of polar molecules. Now, our achievements are that, first of all, in contrast to some other proposals, we would like to use dipole-dipole interactions directly rather than perturbatively, which gives us stronger interactions. And secondly, we use somewhat novel dressing techniques, which allow us for much higher tunability and give rise to more exotic physics. We will describe a single molecule as a rigid rotor with a dipole moment operator D attached to the internuclear axis, and with a Hamiltonian written in terms of the rotational constant B and the rotational angular momentum N corresponding to the rotation of the two nuclei. The eigenstates of this Hamiltonian are, of course, characterized by the total angular momentum N and its projection NZ on the Z-axis. The lowest four states are the non-degenerate N equals 0 state and the, triplet degenerate N equals 1 manifold. In the presence of a DC electric field in the Z direction, we get a DC Stark shift term added to our Hamiltonian, which couples states with the same NZ and partially removes the degeneracy between the three N equals 1 levels. To create a spin model, we consider two such molecules, I and J, that are separated by a vector R with spherical coordinates R, theta, and phi. And then dipole-dipole interaction can be written in the following familiar form, where DI and DJ are the dipole moment operators of molecules I and J. Since we want a spin model, we will call this state spin down and this state spin up. Since dipole-dipole interactions are typically much weaker than all of these energy splittings, if we start only with these two states, then dipole-dipole interactions will be too weak to take us outside of this two-level subspace, and therefore, we can in fact project our Hamiltonian, dipole-dipole interacting Hamiltonian, on states up and down. The result is the following XXZ type model. So here, SXI, SYI, and SZI are spin 1/2 operators describing the up-down two-level system in the molecule I. The interaction depends on the relative position of the two molecules through the Y20 spherical harmonic, which is proportional to 1 minus 3 cosine squared theta. This ZZ term can be explained simply by treating the up and down states here as an up and down pointing dipole, such that two aligned dipoles have opposite sign of the interaction from two anti-aligned dipoles. To understand this XX plus YY interaction, it is enough to realize that it is in fact proportional to the flip-flop interaction, which is driven by the transition dipole moment between states up and down. Now, let me briefly mention that if one adds hopping to this Hamiltonian, so far the molecules are fixed, but if we add hopping, which will give this tunneling T here, then what we get, turns out, is a TJ model, which is tunable and might, in fact, allow one to controllably realize D-wave superfluidity. But for the rest of the talk, there'll be no hopping, so the molecules will be fixed on their site. While this model is certainly very interesting, you notice that if JZ is equal to JXY, we will have S dot S coupling along any direction for any positions of the molecules. And so an interaction diagram of this kind, where we have ZZ interactions along one direction and S dot S interactions along another direction, is not possible. So an interesting question is whether we can have JZ and JXY come with different angular dependencies. And the answer is yes. Turns out the dipole-dipole interactions can drive the following process with the Y2 minus 2 spherical harmonic as the angular dependence. While this process here adds 2 units of Z angular momentum to the internal rotation of the two molecules, it subtracts those 2 units of angular momentum from the rotation of the two molecules around each other, as shown by this phase factor here. And this is nothing but the Einstein-de Haas effect. To define the spin model, which takes advantage of this process, we still keep defining this state as spin down, but we define now state up as a linear combination of these states 1 and 2, as shown here. And we'll call the state up a dress state, because in order to define it, we will dress our rigid rotors with resonant microwave fields, coupling states 1 and 2 to a higher lying rotational state. And let's project now our dipole-dipole interaction on states up and down. The result is a slightly more complicated XXZ model. So these two terms you've already seen before, and they're proportional to the Y20 spherical harmonic. But now we have an extra term that depends on the Y2 minus 2 spherical harmonic, and it contributes to the flip-flop interaction, and it comes precisely from this process that we started with. So now you see that the XX plus YY interaction, in fact, has a different angular dependence from the ZZ interaction. And now we're in business, and an interaction diagram, for example, of this kind is possible. But now probably almost all of you are wondering, why do we care about realizing this particular form of interaction, or any other interaction where it looks different in different directions? So what can we implement with this? So one example are symmetry-protected topological phases. In contrast to locally ordered phases, such as, for example, this anti-Fermi magnet, topological phases have no local order parameter and are instead characterized by more exotic quantities, such as, for example, topological invariance or unusual entanglement properties that I will mention later. These phases will be symmetry-protected in the sense that they will be distinct from other gapped phases only in the presence of certain symmetries. To illustrate this point, consider the following cartoon phase diagram with a line of phase transitions. Then these two points here, in fact, clearly belong to the same phase because you can go from one point to the other without crossing the line of phase transitions. On the other hand, if a particular symmetry restricts the phase diagram to this line here, then these two points are, in fact, in a different phase because the only way to connect them is to cross this line of phase transitions. The motivation for studying these symmetry-protected topological phases is one of the motivations is the general quest in condensed matter theory and many-body physics in general to classify and understand all phases of matter. And maybe one can also mention that some of these topological phases, maybe not these particular ones, they're believed to be important for topological quantum computing ideas. I mean, you know, there's the station Q here where people are paid a lot of money to precisely use these topological phases to implement fault-tolerant quantum computers. And you can also imagine some other applications in industry, such as, for example, maybe a topologically protected state transfer, topologically protected wires, where you know, your information doesn't decay and get from one point to the other very well. So, well, there's some motivation to study these phases beyond classifying and understanding all phases. We will follow Wen and collaborators to implement symmetry-protected topological phases in spin 1/2 ladders. So the molecules here, the spin 1/2 particles, sit at vertices of this ladder. And we work in the presence of the following symmetry, where sigma is the exchange of the two legs, while d2 consists of the identity, the pi pulse around x-axis on all spins, similarly for y and similarly for z. Turns out, and I will not prove this, in the presence of these symmetries, this phase has 7 non-trivial symmetry-protected topological phases. Again, we will follow Wen and collaborators to implement the following Hamiltonian. So we will assume that along the legs we have Heisenberg antiferromagnetic interactions, while along the rungs we have more general XXZ type interactions. Although this is not the most general Hamiltonian obeying these two symmetries, it still allows one to access 2 of the 7 non-trivial symmetry-protected topological phases. And let me give you some intuition for what these phases are. Suppose that Jz is equal to Jxy, and they're both large and negative. In this case, we can first diagonalize a single rung, which looks like a small Heisenberg ferromagnet, and whose ground state is just the triplet state. And now we can think of each rung as a spin 1 particle, and we project Heisenberg antiferromagnetic interactions along the legs onto these spin 1 particles, and we get a spin 1 Heisenberg antiferromagnet whose ground state is the famous gapped Haldane phase. To get the other symmetry-protected topological phase, we can change the sign of Jxy, which is in fact equivalent to applying a pi phase on the down state on one of the legs, which means that this other SPT phase is the same as this one, except the effective spin 1 particle is made up of slightly different constituents. These two phases have the following symmetry-protected features. First of all, in a finite ladder, there'll be at the edges, there'll be a twofold degenerate edge states, and also these phases will have a twofold degenerate entanglement spectrum. So what does this mean? If we take the ground state of such a ladder, and we divide the ladder in two, and then trace over half of the system, then the eigenvalues of the resulting reduced density matrix will be doubly degenerate. And this is one of the peculiar entanglement properties that characterizes these symmetry-protected topological phases. Now, we can implement precisely these kind of nearest neighbor interactions with polar molecules, as I just described. However, we have long-range one of our cubed interactions, and we have all of these next nearest neighbor interactions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So do these symmetry-protected topological phases survive in the presence of these longer-range interactions? And the answer is indeed yes, and we find the same two non-trivial symmetry-protected topological phases that have exactly these symmetry-protected properties. So to conclude this first part of the talk, simple microwave dressing gives access to interacting symmetry-protected topological phases that survive in the presence of long-range interactions. We hope that the same holds for more interesting examples, such as, for example, the Kitaev honeycomb model, or the bilinear biquadratic spin 1 model, which we can implement with more control and more microwave fields on rotational levels. An interesting open question is whether the classification of symmetry-protected topological phases in fact holds in the presence of long-range interactions. And more generally, this and many other polar molecule proposals allow us to study the field of peculiar effects of long-range interactions, for example, on quantum magnetism, where we can see such interesting things as the as algebraic decay of correlations, for example, in the presence of a gap, which is very unusual, which cannot happen, say, for a short-range interacting system. And Hans-Peter Buchler has a very nice poster discussing some of these thoughts. So let me spend the last 10 minutes or so discussing the second part of the talk on topological flat bands and fractional churn insulators. Let me start by briefly reviewing the fractional quantum Hall effect. Consider a two-dimensional electron gas in a strong magnetic field, and then in the absence of interactions, we can characterize the system by Landau levels, as you all know. And then here I show the lowest Landau level, which is made up of a huge number of degenerate cyclotron orbitals. And then as we put more and more electrons in this system, we start filling these Landau levels. And once a given Landau level is completely filled, this is the integer quantum Hall effect. Now suppose the first Landau level is partially filled, and then you immediately see that there is a huge degeneracy corresponding to various ways of populating these degenerate cyclotron orbitals. In this case, it turns out that sometimes Coulomb interactions can break the degeneracy in a partially filled Landau level and can open a bulk gap, which will give rise to the fractional quantum Hall state. An important question that condensed matter and many-body theorists asked a while ago was whether one can find this exotic fractional quantum Hall effect physics, first of all, on a lattice as opposed to a continuum, and secondly, without a magnetic field. And also, a while ago, they realized that the answer is indeed yes, and those fractional quantum Hall-like states are called fractional churn insulators, and they require, among other ingredients, the following two ingredients. First, we need flat single-particle energy bands, which will give rise to degeneracies, much like in these Landau levels, so that even weak interactions can dominate the kinetic energy. And secondly, the particles that hop in these lattices, they must have complex hopping amplitudes, such that a particle hopping around a plaquette, and if we multiply all its hopping amplitudes, it can pick up a non-zero total phase, much like an electron going around a magnetic flux can pick up these Aharonov-Bohm phases. And these phases effectively endow the system with curvature, which can in turn give rise to non-trivial topology. So let me now spend one slide discussing the relationship between topology and why these states are called churn insulators. Consider a single particle hopping in a 2D square lattice with a two-site unit cell, as shown in this picture. Go into momentum space at each point in the Brillouin zone, and we have no interactions now because we have a single particle. Go into momentum space at each point K in the Brillouin zone, we have a 2x2 block Hamiltonian, and any 2x2 matrix can be expanded as a linear combination of the three Pauli matrices and identity, where this vector d of k is a three-dimensional vector defined at each point in the Brillouin zone. And then the eigenvalues of this 2x2 block Hamiltonian give us the band structure. So what does it mean, for example, for the slowest band to be a topological flat band? So flat is pretty clear. We just want the dispersion of this band, the bandwidth, to be much smaller than the gap between the two bands. But what does it mean for it to be topological? To understand this, let's remember that the Brillouin zone is in fact periodic, and therefore it corresponds to a torus. And then the direction of this vector d gives us a mapping from the torus to unit sphere. And now consider a little patch of area in the Brillouin zone, which corresponds to a little patch of area on the torus. And then under this mapping, this little patch maps onto a patch on the unit sphere. One can write a relatively simple formula that gives the area of this small patch. And then integrating now over the entire Brillouin zone and dividing by the area of the sphere, we can compute the number of times this torus wraps over the sphere under this mapping. And this must be an integer. This integer is called a Chern number, and bands that have a non-zero Chern number are precisely the ones that are called topological. So if you now partially fill such a topological flat band, then interactions can sometimes remove the huge degeneracy that we have and give rise to these fractional quantum Hall-like states that are called fractional Chern insulators because they live in these Chern bands. So again, the two ingredients that we need are flat bands and this topology. And indeed, there have been quite a few, and many more proposals in many body and condensed matter literature on how to realize topological flat bands and fractional Chern insulators. However, a realistic physical system, with a recent exception, is still missing. And one of our main messages is that dipolar spin systems, such as, for example, our favorite polar molecules, in fact naturally admit these topological flat bands, and as a result can give rise to these fractional Chern insulator or fractional quantum Hall effect-like ground state. So fortunately, we have already done most of the work in the first part of the talk. Recall the discussion of these symmetry-protected topological phases, where spin down was defined in this lowest state here, rotational state, and spin up was a linear combination of states 1 and 2. Now, to realize topological flat bands and fractional Chern insulators, we now do a slightly different dressing scheme, where spin down is defined in the same way. However, the spin up is made up of a linear combination of three states, 1, 2, and state 3. So the main differences are that, first of all, we use state 3 in addition to states 1 and 2. And we also assume that we have a bipartite lattice with A and B sublattices. And we assume that these coefficients X, Y, and Z, which come from these dressing lasers, depend on whether we sit on the A sublattice or in the B sublattice. So now suppose that the applied DC electric field, which splits this degeneracy, is so weak that states up and down have really negligible induced dipole moments, in which case the only terms that we have in our Hamiltonian are these flip-flop terms, where Tij come from dipole-dipole interactions, and these are precisely these flip-flop terms that June described earlier this week, and I believe Bruno might describe tomorrow in the case of chromium. So now we can realize that spin 1/2 particles are in fact equivalent to hardcore bosons. So we can think of state down as the vacuum, and we can think of state up as the presence of a hardcore boson, where hardcore means that two bosons cannot sit on the same site. Then using this mapping, the flip-flop terms of the spins map onto the hopping of these bosons, together with the hardcore constraint that prevents two bosons from sitting on the same site. And it turns out that the sublattice dependent dressing, together with this e to the 2i phi phases coming from the Y2 spherical harmonic, can give rise to non-zero fluxes, which in turn end our bands with topology and give rise to topological flat bands that have a non-zero Chern number. And furthermore, the anisotropic long-range hops, which here come precisely from dipole-dipole interactions, can be tuned to interfere in a way that the bands are in fact very flat. And then by tuning these dressing coefficients, X, Y, and Z, which come from the dressing lasers, as well as the direction and the strength of the DC electric field, we in fact find here a topological flat band. And then if you imagine partially filling this topological flat band with these bosons, which are just the spin flip excitations, then using exact diagonalization, we show that the hard core constraint alone is a good enough interaction to give rise to precisely these fractional quantum hole-like states that are called fractional churn insulators. So to conclude this second and the last part of the talk, we believe that in addition to this proposal by Jean Dalibard and Nigel Cooper, this is the first realistic implementation of fractional churn insulators. The particular state that we get with this flat band that I showed in the previous slide for the experts is the nu equals 1/2 bosonic Laughlin state, while with a few more levels and a little bit more control, we can get some more exotic fractional quantum hole states, again, for the experts, such as, for example, the Halperin 2-2-1 state, in a fractional quantum hole bilayer. We have a phase diagram that shows phase transitions between these fractional churn insulating states and neighboring solid and superfluid phases. A lot of preparation and detection questions are, in fact, still open. Together with some of my friends at Caltech, we in fact believe that these para fermions that have recently been proposed in the condensed matter community and are equivalent to fractionalized Majorana fermions can be realized by introducing a line defect in fractional churn insulators. And one reason this is exciting, so supposedly since it's fractionalized, it's more exciting than Majoranas, but even Majoranas are extremely exciting in the condensed matter community, as many of you probably heard in the past year or so. We hope to use this system to study exotic physics beyond the fractional quantum Hall effect. And finally, let me emphasize that all of these ideas, and in particular the realization of these fractional churn insulators, they apply almost equally easily to other systems that interact via dipole interactions, such as Rydberg atoms, magnetic atoms, and spins in solid state, provided, of course, these spins are sufficiently close to each other to interact with dipole-dipole interactions. And with this, let me thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions? There's one.
How can you observe these topological orders? What's the best way to do it?
Right. So there are some proposals. There is at least one proposal from Nigel Cooper, which actually I have to think whether it applies to our particular setup, which allows you to, for example, at least test that you have these topological flat bands. So this, in his case, it's basically some sort of a shaking of the lattice that probes this topological band structure. Now, as far as detecting these topological phases, so for the first part of the talk, these were the symmetry-protected topological phases. So one thing you can do there is you can look at the edges where you should have these symmetry-protected edge states, and you can, in fact, look for this degeneracy, and only certain operators lift that degeneracy, and you can sort of do basically a spectroscopy to look at this.
Now, how do you look at the edges with spectroscopy? What kind of spectroscopy?
So you would consider, for example, Raman transitions, and maybe, I mean, right now, say, you know, June could not quite focus, on a part of a sample, but I think in the new iteration of the experiment, they might be able to apply sort of somewhat focused laser pulses that would sort of focus, for example, mostly, in one part of the sample, but not the other. And you can try driving a Raman transition and changing the frequency, and then you will see that you have the zero bias peak corresponding to these SPT phases. And now as far as fractional churn insulators, so then again, you can try playing very similar games where in the bulk, you should have a gap, while on the edges of the system, you should have these chiral edge modes. And then, in fact, depending on which fractional churn insulator state you have, you're supposed to have a different kind of an edge mode. And there are some papers by Joel Moore, for example, where they discuss, how one might be able to do spectroscopy of these edge states to determine which state you're in. But that's a good question. There's still a lot of open questions there.
Thank you. Alexei, what is exotic physics beyond fractional quantum Hall effect?
Actually,
parafermions are there in the fractional quantum Hall effect. Even the famous px plus ipy topological state is more or less sitting with these Pfaffian states and so on. So what is so exotic that
this is why it's actually a question mark. So maybe George just answered that question. The answer is no, maybe. I see. Well, first of all, possibly the answer is no, but some ideas, for example, that people are discussing, and there are two papers, one from Mike Hermeli at JILA, and another one that Lukas Fitkovsky, Alexei Kitaev, and Nate Lindner are writing, which describe how the presence of the lattice actually introduces some non-trivial effects, because you get this discrete translational symmetry, and say your anions, I mean, if you try to move them, say, around a plaquette, you know, go there and back, it actually introduces some non-trivial subtleties. But, you know, some might say that, it's roughly the same thing. So, maybe there are some still open questions left, but maybe not. So.
Hey. I was wondering what changes if you add the tunneling in the Tran insulators.
I'm not even sure, and we're working in this, what happens if you add holes and no tunneling. So even this to me is still somewhat of a puzzle. You know, how many holes do you have to add to completely destroy the state? And then introducing tunneling, I won't even venture actually to say.
In this system, how large is the bulk gap? Does it matter to the experiments?
How large?
Is the bulk gap.
Yeah, so the bulk gap would precisely be equal to that frequency that June is measuring in the experiments. So it's the frequency, the flip-flop frequency. This would set your bulk gap. And, first of all, I mean, our hope is that one might not even need to cool your sample below this bulk gap, because all the physics is happening in the spins, and the spins can in fact be, it's actually the spin temperature that matters, and the spins can be prepared actually much better. So the situation actually is quite favorable in these models that don't have hopping in them.
So, am I next? Okay, so should the magnetic field on polar molecules be big or small? You didn't talk about the hyperfine degrees of freedom,
correctly. Right. So I didn't mention the hyperfine structure here. So in the proposals that we write, we either say that, first of all, we can imagine molecules that have no hyperfine structure, but okay, of course it's hard. I mean, strontium oxide or something like this. And as far as these alkali dimers, so one way to get a clean model is in fact to apply a large enough magnetic field that would actually decouple your nuclear spins and make the basis, so you know, the upstate will have some nuclear spins and the downstate will have some nuclear spins, and you just apply a magnetic field to make sure that it's the same basis in the upstate and in the downstate, much like I learned all of this stuff from Hesse Seldegunde and Professor Hudson, so on. But of course, I mean, the slightly funny, we are still applying a magnetic field. Hey, we wanted to do the fractional quantum Hall state without magnetic fields, but.
My motivation to do all this, Majorana fermions, is the possibility to do quantum computation. Now, with dipolar interactions, are you sure that actually these Majorana still allow for quantum error correction, or is error correction codes gone because due to the long-range hopping, if you make a defect, it can immediately hop to the end of your sample, and error corrections becomes impossible?
Well, so I would say none of these dressing ideas are useful in reality for either Majorana-based or topological-based quantum computing, because because in these topological sort of quantum computing ideas, you sort of rely on the fact that at least your original Hamiltonian is pretty good, but here we have all these errors that lead to the Hamiltonian, and then once we're in that Hamiltonian, then it's all protected. But there are all these errors, such as, you know, sort of imperfections in your lasers and everything, that you're actually not protected from. But I also agree with you that even the very Majorana sort of Majorana fermion ideas with dipolar interactions will be will be different. In fact, that's what I wanted to discuss with you next week.
Thanks, Alexei, for a very good talk. So these are not going to be perfect systems. How much temperature and disorder can you tolerate?
Right. So this was, I guess this was a sort of a question that I already partially answered. I'm not sure if I can add anything more other than what I already said. A calculation that's easy to do and that actually we have not done yet is start removing particles. Don't let them hop, just start removing them and seeing how your gap in the non-interacting case, closes. And in fact, right now we cannot yet do calculations with disorder, with interactions, because we do exact diagonalization, and as soon as you introduce disorder, you actually no longer have nice quantum numbers. And we're collaborating now with Miles Studenmeier in Irvine. He's moving to perimeter, and he, in fact, might be able to do DMRG on these 2D samples, and then we might be able to answer how sensitive we are to disorder. And as far as temperature goes, so my understanding is that as long as you have a as long as your temperature is sort of lower than your single site gap, and if your particles are prepared very well in the down state as opposed to the up state, which seems pretty reasonable, this should work. So the temperature requirements are lower than one might think.
Okay, Alexei, as a non-condensed matter person, I had a few questions. Just want to see if I understand what you're saying correctly and ask a couple questions. One of them you already answered, which had to do about disorder and stuff like that, so I want to ask that. One of the reasons you're working with non-tunneling systems and therefore essentially very narrow lattice bands is so you could work with reactive molecules because they're not actually hopping from site to site. I think that's correct.
Well, this is one of the reasons, but the other reason is But as I learned from mostly, I guess, you, is that even if the molecules are non-reactive, then since I want to work with excited rotational states, then we will get rotational quenching even in non-reactive molecules. So
right.
So my hands are really tied here.
The other question then is the key thing then is the off-diagonal dipole matrix element or the T-matrix element that transfers from site to site. So what I'm wondering about is what the proper figure of merit for that is. I mean, you've got a number of possible physical systems, including molecules or erbium, dysprosium atoms. Since you don't have a tunneling, that is to say a lattice bandwidth.
Right.
It's not a. In chemistry, we have dipole length as the. But this is something else. This is off-diagonal matrix element. So, what really is the figure of merit in relation to what parameter of the system that really sets whether this works or not? What strength of dipole do we need?
Yeah. So my naive thinking was that the stronger your dipole relative to various decoherence mechanisms, the better. So that's the naive thinking, and the simplest decoherence mechanism is everything flies away eventually. So that's the naive answer. Now, I guess what you raised is the stuff that maybe Michael will mention, how dipole-dipole interactions are not really sort of as simple as I'm describing them. Dipole-dipole interactions may induce sort of these hops from site to site. So not in these papers, but in previous, say, these TJ papers, we made some very, very rough estimates for how bad these things are, and we thought that they were okay. But I don't think I can actually, I don't think I can come up on the spot with a better figure of merit than nearest neighbor dipole-dipole strength over the fastest decoherence mechanism. But maybe Michael can or Lincoln can.
I'd be happy to address that later. I want to come back to the answer about disorder in 2D. I didn't understand what your collaborator planned to do, because DMRG, first of all, it scales very badly in 2D. Why wouldn't you at least use PEPs? And secondly, it's notoriously bad at solving problems with disorder. So I was actually surprised.
Well, so there's a paper from Giffre et Vidal where they already used DMRG. Well, sorry, I interchangeably, they do use DMRG, in fact, to study fractional quantum Hall states. So that's already being done. So And it works. They consider cylinders, and with DMRG, they have to have basically a finite width ladder. So it's hard, but it's better than what we can do with exact diagonalization.
I see. So this is one of these multi-legged ladder sort of problems.
Is
it six rungs, or how many rungs on the ladder?
Well, we'll see. It's still coding. GIFRES was, something like 6-8, something like that.
Okay, I think that's about the maximum you can do. Steve White also demonstrated that a while ago.
I mean, Miles is precisely working with Steve, so...
So I think it's six rungs. It was the biggest I've seen, but it could be a little bit bigger now. And then the problem with disorder, it's hard to demonstrate localization with these methods because you need lots of phases to add up from all over the system, and this is something that you know you lose when you do your truncation. So are you sure it'll work for disorder? I mean, I don't know.
I don't want to study the physics of disorder. I just want to start adding holes in my system and see when my twofold degenerate topologically protected ground states stop being degenerate. That's all I'm looking for, really. Maybe there are some other things that are hard to study. The reason why we believe that we can do DMRG here is that DMRG and matrix product states and all these related things, they work very well when your states have a short correlation length. And we know how short our correlation length is here is. It's actually maybe, three, four sites. So we believe we might be able to pull it off.
Okay, and my last thing I wanted to ask, since this is an audience of people working on all kinds of molecules, is there a kind of molecule that's preferable for realizing some of your ideas? Is it singlet sigma? Is it, some other kind of molecule? Is there a particular singlet sigma people should go after?
Yeah, here, so singlet sigmas because we don't want sort of any complications of electronic spins. Preferably, no nuclear spin like strontium oxide, so slow them down or whatever you can. And the larger dipole moment is the better. Although if dipole moment becomes too large, then you will in fact have to use some of these dressing techniques to weaken it because you will not be able to have your lattice stronger than the dipole moment. I mean, if it's too large, actually, I think if you put in strontium oxide there with its 10 Debye dipole moment, then you will be in the polaron physics which Roman and Felipe are studying. Some larger than KRB dipole moment, I think.
So it sounds like rubidium cesium might actually be a very good bet.
Rubidium cesium, yes, rubidium cesium.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Let's thank Alexei again. And we'll resume in half an hour's time.